Grandpa.
Well, my sister and I were just at supper, and the phone rang, and I went, and he said, "This is Major Bond of the NCC." And I said, "Yes." He said, "Could you authenticate your grandfather's birthplace?" I said, "Oh, sure." So Helen and I got dressed up and went sailing over. And sure enough, it was there. Well, I had on one of these little net hats, you know. I had my black coat with mink collar on. Do you know, we ended up with crowbars prying all the siding that the people had put on the logs. And when we got it out, those pine logs were as white as the day they were put in.
Right?
And Grandpa was born in 1836.
1836? In what
time? Well, what they called Glen Ogilvie at that time, but is now Cyrville or Ottawa proper.
Cyrville?
C-Y-R-V-I-L-L-E.
Cyrville, near Ottawa.
Ottawa, well, just outside of Ottawa, just, you know. And we had a wonderful time. And from that, we just carried on being interested in the Gloucester Historical Society. You see, it's townships, and this was a township, Gloucester Township. And today, I am on the, more or less, the board of directors. I don't go too often, but we have a museum in a little village outside of Ottawa. It's more of a... trying to you get all the farming equipment of the early years in there, and we have some wonderful pieces. And of course we've got dresses and we've got this and that. It's very interesting, but it's a problem to get things going and get things people interested enough to drive maybe 16 miles out to get.
I know how difficult it is. I know how difficult it's been to get our project for the Tanana Yukon Historical Society off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it took, as I said, the Pioneers of Alaska have spearheaded the historical preservation that has been accomplished in the interior. And I think then through the Historical Society we raised money, and then we got a small matching grant, enough to pay for equipment and tapes, things like that. And it's a beginning, and we've made such a good beginning. It's so exciting that we want to reapply and see if we can do the same thing again.
Once I think you're excited, and the enthusiasm grows among others then.
Yes, right.
So...
well, there are two or three of us very excited about it, but I'd like to get back to you now, Ms. Ogilvie. You're Margaret Ogilvie.
I'm Margaret, yes.
And you were born...
I'm the oldest one of the family. And don't believe what you saw on the White Horse Star. I'm not quite 72 yet. No, I'm not 70 yet, but I was born in Ottawa, too. And I have two sisters, and my brother is gone now. But we were the only grandchildren that Grandpa knew.
Two sisters and one brother.
Mm-hmm.
And when were you born?
1903.
What's your birth date?
October the 30th.
October 30th, 1903. And you were born in Ottawa.
Oh, yeah.
Then your grandfather, at the time of when you were small children, was your grandfather retired and back in...
Oh, no. Yes. Grandpa was... he was still working and surveying around. And as a matter of fact, he used to spoil us terribly. This is a little story I always like to think of. Sundays, he would take us to church. And we... went to St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church and sat in the front row, just below the pulpit. And, Grandpa's wife was my step-grandmother, but we called her Auntie O.P. all the time. She was General Richardson's sister, after whom the Richardson Highway was named. But, anyway, my own grandmother was Mary Sparks, and they came out with Colonel Byer before that, and they did a tremendous work in Ottawa. Spark Street is one of our main streets, and this is the connection there we're proud of too. But we'd get to church and the sermon would start, and Grandpa would lean over to Opie and he'd say, "I'm going to take the children out because the sermon will be too long. right in the middle of everything, we'd get up and march out of the church and we'd go for a walk. And he'd take us to the tower, the Parliament Tower. We'd get up there and he'd tell us all about that. And he's even taken us down to the cemetery and discussed our family, tried to teach us to tell the time by the sun. Mm-hmm. He bought us cameras and taught us to use them. But we just loved him, and he certainly was proud of us, except he was ashamed of me because I was absolutely no good in arithmetic.
And he was a mathematician, probably, an engineer.
Yeah, well, he was a surveyor, you see, and but he couldn't have been more kind to us. Mm-hmm. And then he went north in 1913, that's when my youngest sister was born. I know, they sent us over there for supper, and O.P. read our teacups, and she said, "You're going to have a baby sister." And of course, we were all excited, and Mary was waiting before we got home. But he died that year, that fall.
In 1913.
He took pneumonia up on James Bay, but was buried from our home. And it was a big Masonic funeral, you know, and they had the band and everything. And those are things that I never will forget.
Would you, just for the purpose of this recording, would you describe his coming to the Canadian, into the Yukon? And he was in charge of the Alaska Canada.
Well, Grandpa came in.
Border survey too.
Yes, he put in the boundary line between Canada and Alaska. But he did come up to this country in 1884 and walked from the Arctic right down to Taku. And he was lost for a year. Of course, these are things that have come down to me from Dad.
So he must have gone down the Mackenzie River and then.
I don't think it was the Mackenzie. I think it was in more this area. I don't know how he got up there.
The main route was the Mackenzie. At that time, it was. Don't you think, Mark Reifer?
I think so.
Some of the earlier people came in the Mackenzie and portaged over to the Porcupine and came into Alaska that way or down.
Well, all these lakes and rivers and things I have heard of all my life. Daddy talked of it and Grandpa talked of it. Oh, he used to tell us about the beautiful flowers. And he said, they can change their crop overnight. You'll get a different flower just come right up.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's in the blood. I know Dr. Falkenberg, whom I met at an international convention, told me that Grandpa had discovered the Edmonton Trail, too. And at that time, Grandpa told him about the oil, slicks of oil, and all, you know, the little ponds, and they thought he was crazy. That was the Abbasands.
Yes.
And, of course, I stand up for the pioneer because I said they went in there without the equipment that people have today, and they've gone through so much and should be given much more credit than the men of today because they did it really on their own.
They were the real pioneers.
They were the pioneers.
The pioneers of today in the Arctic or the North are going in by helicopter, and then another helicopter sometimes comes in with the cash to leave while they do their tramping around.
Well, these men had to even more or less feed themselves from the land, keep alive on that in that way. But
then he came in 1884, his first trip, and then he came from the Arctic down to Taku, which is in the Alaska Panhandle.
Yes.
Area.
Mm-hmm. But I know my dad was with him on that boundary survey because we have a picture of one of their camps and Daddy in it.
And what was your father's name?
Morley Ogilvie.
Morley.
And your mother? William Morley Ogilvie.
And your mother?
Flora Drummond.
Flora Drummond.
Mm-hmm.
Was it your grandfather, William Ogilvie, who was here at the time of the discovery in
1896, 1897, 1896, 1897, 1897, 1897, 1898, you know. Yes, he was here, and
wasn't he called upon to settle some of the disputes?
Oh, he settled most of them, I believe.
That's what I understand. As I recall, and I'm not an expert on the Yukon, and I'm sorry that I'm not, but you'll have to excuse me because I am an Alaskan.
Oh, yes.
But as I recall from some of my reading, that William Ogilvie was the just about the only man in the area who possessed any authority from the Canadian government. Army, was he not?
No. He was just a surveyor.
A Canadian surveyor.
Yes. He, the Mountie, there was one commissioner, and he was acting, but Grandpa was the first appointed commissioner. Over in the museum, I presented a picture of Grandpa yesterday to them, but they have this book, which you might be very interested in, Grandpa's writing, and descriptions of all the claims.
Well, I was given a souvenir claim that from application and affidavit for Placer Mine by George Carmack.
Mm-hmm. No, but this is registering all the claims as...
in a registration book.
I guess so, because he has drawn the descriptions and written out everything. And
he happened to be in this area at the time of the discovery.
But he was absolutely incorruptible. It has been written he was an impeccable civil servant, and I thought that was just a marvelous description.
I think Peter Burton, in his Klondike Fever, describes him somewhat like that.
Yes, but Don Thompson in Man on Meridians does too. He wrote quite a bit about him in that.
Man and
Meridians by Don Thompson.
I'll get that book and read it. I think I'd love to read it now that I've met you.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson. You have to admire the people who were the incorruptible ones at the time, because there was so much. Well, I can understand them.
Well, this is Father. He wouldn't. Grandpa wouldn't let Father even stake a claim, and Father had the Dick Lowe fraction. But when he was appointed, he tore it up and threw it open.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, your father at the time was how old about?
Well, he wasn't very old. I guess he was coming up from McGill.
McGill University.
McGill, yes. That's where Dad took his training,
mm-hmm.
and civil and mining engineering. And the family have just followed in his... The male ones, Ogilvies, have followed in his footsteps. I have two nephews now who are mining engineers.
I see.
And one's in northern Quebec at present.
But your father, Morley Ogilvie, at the time, in 1896, at the time of the strike, what was his claim that he filed on? Would you repeat that name?
Dick Lowe Fraction. Grandpa had that.
Dick Lowe Fraction.
And they call it the Dick Lowe Fraction. It was the wealthiest claim that was discovered, but he just wouldn't take it. He threw it open. And I guess Dick Lowe then staked it, you see.
Okay, but it was a fraction of a... between claims.
Well, this is what they call it. I just don't know its description.
Yeah.
Now, it may
sometimes
be...
Sometimes the miners would go out, or the prospectors would stake, and they thought they were adjacent. And
mm-hmm.
then sometimes the lines were wrong, and it would leave
a little bit in between.
A little bit in between, or rectangular areas, or mm-hmm. triangular area. So Dick Lowe filed the claim.
Yes, after Grandpa.
Your father.
Grandpa. It was not my father, it was Grandpa had it.
Or your grandfather had it.
Yes. But he wouldn't let Father and my uncle, I don't know when Uncle Paul came in, but he was here for a while too, but he wouldn't let any of them do it. He said, no, you're not going to do those things. And this is the way we have been brought up too. And it's rather nice to feel, I don't want to feel smug about it, but I think this is one of the things that's wrong with the world today. Take what you can get at anybody's expense.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't allowed to do those kind of things.
Then how long was he commissioned here?
In 98 to 1901.
98 to 1901.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Rampart recently, and that was discovered. It was discovered just about the time that the Bonanza in El Dorado
mm-hmm.
were discovered. It was fascinating to go through some of those early records there in the recorder's office. He's very generous and let me in. And then, of course, he went back up to his mine and trusted me. But he knew my husband. My husband
yes.
had been in there and filed claims there. So, and he'd heard of me, but though we had never met. Just fascinating to go through those early records.
When, yes.
Al Mayo settled in that area, where Mayo and McQuesten and Ledoux and Harper were more or less traders who came in here earlier. And Mayo stayed down the Yukon in the Rampart area. Tanana, old station in Rampart areas. And I was fortunate to interview Mayo's daughter in Rampart.
Did you know, McQuestion, Crystal McQuestion Morgan lives down in the States. Have you ever heard of her?
Yes, I have.
Well, she's coming up on the 20th of September.
She's on that trip?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going on that trip, too.
Are you really?
Have you heard of that, Margaret?
Yes.
Go ahead, excuse me.
It's the International decided to have this, the International meeting up in Skagway, and we're coming up to Whitehorse for one day. And so they're coming up on the Wickersham.
Oh.
And I met Bill Kelsey the other night at the play. He came over and looked at me. He says, Margaret Ogilvy, and I had seen him at the International about 3 or 4 years ago. And he said they have a full complement and they've had to turn 350 people down. Isn't that
I was turned down, but I'm going to stow away.
Good for you.
The Wickersham is a ferry vessel that the state of Alaska purchased from Sweden, and it has a lot of passenger accommodation and very little vehicle accommodation. So they are selling it. It's being replaced by a vessel that is presently being completed.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been chartered. They've never chartered one of our ferry vessels for a convention. And leave it to the pioneers. They did it. And unfortunately, our pioneer convention in Alaska conflicts the first few days. So I wrote to them, and I've been in contact with Bertha McKay.
Mm-hmm.
But the man who's in charge of this, I wrote to him and asked him, I'd like to go from Whitehorse and return. And he just sent my letter. I explained why I wanted to go. Long letter. He just wrote on the bottom, sorry, out of room, and sent the whole letter back. So I thought, this is just a challenge to Mike Dalton. I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to return to Fairbanks, fight a white horse, get on the train, and stow away if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure I can get permission from the governor to go aboard, because I know our
governor. Oh, I'm sure you will.
I'll take my sleeping bag and sleep on a deck chair if I have to.
Well, that's the pioneer spirit.
You betcha. I'm going to go to Seattle. I wouldn't miss that for anything. It's a captive group of very unique people,
mm-hmm.
whom I want to visit with.
Well, they are a wonderful crowd of people. Oh. When you go to those sourdough internationals, it gives, I don't know what it does to you.
This weekend in Dawson has been somewhat like our pioneer conventions.
Yes.
I don't know if you know it or not, but we had 59 Fairbanksons here yesterday.
I'm sure you did have.
We counted when we ate dinner Friday evening, 36. And yesterday we had 19 more who came in on two small aircraft. And then another airplane came in.
Yes.
So counting the pilots, we had 59 people.
Isn't that a... Well,
and
this is
most
a,
of us belong to the Pioneers of Alaska. Mm-hmm. So we just had a grand time.
Well, I consider it a tribute to the Dawson area to have you people come and join us when we're...
We've had a wonderful time. It's just, it's been a little hectic downtown occasionally, with the partying, but,
yes.
We just skirt it. We're used to that, we just walk around it.
Sure.
Young people are having their big fling.
Yeah.
But the people in Dawson have really had a wonderful, wonderful program for us. And we'll... The highlight of our trip so far has been the sourdough pancake feed.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah, that was very nice.
Oh, I think she's doing her bit as a pioneer to establish goodwill among everyone.
Well, to get back to William Ogilvy, after he left Dawson in 1901, is that when he began the survey of the Alaska-Canada...
Boundary, no, boundary. That was down 94 up to 98.
1894, that's what brought him, 1894
yes.
to 1898. My husband's father first came to Alaska in 1882.
Is that so?
And he made several scouting trips as in a packer and a guide with... He made one trip with Lieutenant Schwatka of the U.S. Army. but I'm not certain where that was.
No.
He made one trip with Alfred Brooks when he did a survey of the Brooks Range area. But I don't think he didn't do any surveying with the Canadian surveyors. So I just thought I'd turn that in.
Well, yes, certainly.
I'm a shirt-tail pioneer. That's my husband's father.
Well, Grandpa did it mostly by the stars, and he was out just such a short distance. Mm-hmm. And so that is a trick. You have to work at night then when you're doing it, and that would make it so much harder. That added weather element.
And the elements in the Arctic in the winter.
And, well, look at how high you're up coming over the pass there. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful wind, too.
Do you remember any of the stories he would tell you of how he lived during this time?
No, I don't. But, no, he just...
But there was no resupply mission to meet him at a certain point. He and his party began in 1894, and they had to live off the land more.
Oh, yes, they did have to live off the land, and... But he used to, I remember one place, I've heard of this, Dad has told me too. They would, they went into this cabin, and here was a piano. And they, father could play the piano, grandfather played the piano. They just sat down, they had a beautiful musical evening.
Probably been years since they...
Well, my father could sit down, he'd go to an opera and come home and could play the whole opera. By ear, but he played Scottish music, the Highland Fling, and all these things. He had just that light, airy touch. Mm-hmm. And we've had
wonderful evenings at home.
This is the way we were?
Yeah.
We had our enjoyment at home. We were homey people.
So the boundary survey then was between 1894 and 1898.
Mm-hmm.
And at the discovery time, which was 96, and then in 97. Then William Ogilvie remained in this area, in the General Dawson area.
I just forget when he came home.
Yeah. But the boundary survey was not completed till 1898, so mm-hmm. his party went ahead and completed mm-hmm. the boundary survey while he remained in this area as the...
Governor.
As the governor.
Yeah.
He was appointed commissioner first?
Well, that's the whole thing. Well, it's an... They use the term governor or commissioner. Mm-hmm. I believe with the commissioner, it meant the recording of the gold, too, didn't
yes.
it?
I don't think there's ever the governor used officially.
Well, Mrs. Black told me that, she said, your grandfather was the first governor. Well, I think it's just a term that mm-hmm. they use because you get... All the provinces have a lieutenant governor, and although this has only been recognized as it hasn't been designated actually yet, yes, it is as an area. You see, that has some. It sends its own member down.
The Yukon.
Yes, mm-hmm. and then they have the commissioner up here. So, commissioner actually is the term that applies, but. This is what Mrs. Black, George Black, told me. She wrote it in her book. But he certainly was... Well, now they call us the governor's residence up
yes.
here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was built for Grandpa, but he never used it.
He never used it?
No.
Is there a date on that? I think it was completed in
1901.
So then earlier you said that you thought he'd left here in 1901.
Mm-hmm.
And when he left... Dawson, did he go back to Ottawa area, or?
Well, I know they had, they were building dredges at Whitehorse. Now, whether they came right back in 1901, but he remarried, you see, during that time, and was, I know he was in Texas a bit of the time, but he was certainly home when I arrived, and I presume when Helen, because Helen's just a year younger, and when Mary, he probably was up northern Ontario when Gordy came along, but he was home when Mary was born. So we were the only four of the six grandchildren who ever had the opportunity of knowing him.
Mm-hmm. besides W. Morley Ogilvie, your father, what other children?
Paul. Oh, there was Uncle Paul and Uncle Walter and Uncle George.
Paul, Walter, and George.
But Uncle Walter died down in was it Arizona, I think. In 1900 or 1901, because Grandpa sent Dad down there to see him, but he just died about 6 hours before Father got there. And the other uncle, he died as a child. So there was really only Dad and Uncle Paul.
Your father left here. Was your father married to your mother at the time when he came up here?
Yes. He was married in 1901.
So he, but when he accompanied your grandfather on the
he was not married. School.
Mm-hmm. So he returned to Ottawa and was married in 1901.
Yes, and came back out. Mother came up with him to Vancouver, and Dad came up. And then Daddy went into the Cassiar and all that area up the Stikine River. And then he came out in 1913 when Grandpa died, well, the war, and then stayed at home. Because I remember we were just children up at Blue Lake in 1914, and Auntie Margaret said, "Who's that coming up the road?" And Helen and I looked, and we knew his walk. Mm-hmm. And he was home for a couple of years then and did, well, all kinds of work around. And then in 1926, he went back into the Omanika. And Helen and I, and, well, Mary has too, and Gordy, we all have been with him in that area.
I'm not familiar with that area. Would you describe it?
Caribou. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a mine in there. He was 120-some-odd miles from Fort St. James. Mm-hmm. And it was a Cominco mine. That's Consolidated Smelters mine. And he was in there up to 38 when he took ill, and he went down to St. Louis, and I went down to be with him, and he died of lung cancer.
When he went into the Cassiar and this other area, was he going as a mining engineer or surveyor?
Mining engineer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did your Uncle Paul followed the same?
He was an engineer. Mm-hmm. He was a civil engineer. But he wasn't in the country, in the North Country, as much as Dad was at all. And, he built things around home. And
do you see any remnants of a cabin or a house that William Ogilvie might have lived in here?
No, I never have. Mm-hmm.
Historical, maybe it's gone. But
it's probably
historical site. Margaretha, do you know if
it's never heard of it?
Never heard of it. I don't know.
So many have been.
Oh, well, he probably was just living in a tent.
Well, more likely. Well, not when he would be living in a building of some kind, but there's nothing around here that I never hear mention of it.
I never have either. But when I went up to the dome the other day and looked down, the layout of Dawson is exactly as it was when he surveyed it in the first place. And then up there it looks so wonderful, you know, and you don't notice the...
Probably looks like so... Everything looks so straight.
Yes.
Same when you go up to a small plane and you look out of there, everything looks just...
Mm-hmm. It's just the same.
Do you have any idea of when he surveyed the town of Dawson? What year?
Well, it was prior to...
98?
Oh, yes. Well, in that time. 19, yeah, I don't know, really.
We read about the Dawson and the Stampede and the riverbank, which is...
Well, I think you'd find that in his book, mm-hmm. The Early Days in the Yukon.
Early Days in the Yukon.
If you can get it.
I think we have a marvelous Alaska collection at our University of Alaska. It's called the Skinner Collection. And it's there are copies of many marvelous volumes on the North Wing, not just the West Wing. Mm-hmm. And his is Early Days in the Yukon.
Early Days in the Yukon by William Ogilvy.
Mm-hmm. I'll see if I can find that. Now the book by Mrs. Black. What is the name of that?
My 70 years.
My 70 years.
Martha Black.
I'm particularly interested in all of these, but she went to school here with this lady I'm traveling with. Mrs. Coyle.
And she came over the past too.
Mm-hmm. No, she didn't go to school here.
No, she was from
here. She lived as a married woman.
No, she did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Louise Black might have been. You're getting your blacks mixed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I think you're getting your blacks mixed.
Yeah.
Oh, Louise Black isn't the
Martha
same family.
Martha Louise Black was the one that was a member of Parliament. Louise Black